Today I have a special interview to share with you with the Reverend Shauna Foster, and in the interview she explains who she is and what she has done, and I think you will understand why I wanted to share some of her wisdom and recent experience with you.
We are delighted to welcome Reverend Shauna Foster with us today, and it's International Women's Day, and I wanted to talk to history-making women, and I thought, who do I know? And there she is. So, Shauna, thank you so much for being with us. To get everybody up to speed on what you've been doing the last several months, why don't I just let you tell them what your position has been and who you've been working with?
Greetings, everybody. Behind me is the beautiful city of South Bend, Indiana. I am the Faith Engagement Director for Pete Buttigieg's presidential campaign, and he, as you know, dropped out to endorse Joe Biden. So I am free to speak.
It's been a while since we've spent some quality time together. The last time it was, I think it was in a rented house in Kentucky.
For General Assembly.
So I'm really thrilled to talk to you today. And I want to say I was really impressed when I read in the Washington Post that this is what you were doing. As a Unitarian Universalist minister, I'm always excited to see what else we can do in the world. But it's also wonderful to kind of see people spreading their wings and engaging with the community in different ways. So tell us about what this work has entailed for you and what it's meant to you to do this over the last several months.
I'm very proud to be a Unitarian Universalist in this position, and I want more Unitarian Universalists involved in electoral politics, although, you know, we are quite involved as a religion as it is. And I think that it was a great background because, you know, we are very interested in other religions and in the pluralism of this country. And so I just really came in with a good knowledge of what the diverse communities in the United States of people of faith and people of no faith, right? I was definitely contacted by the American Atheist Association and the American Humanist Association, and they were quite pleased as well that the Faith Engagement Director Pete hired was a Unitarian Universalist. So I think we should really be proud of our activism and how we lead the country on a lot of political movements. And I think I really want more Unitarians to get involved. When I was a parish minister, oftentimes people would say, like, oh, we shouldn't do so much social justice or only do social justice. But for me, you know, that is a faith made manifest. How are we changing the world? How are we changing ourselves? How can it be better? And so coming to this position was very natural. I was very excited and honored. This is the earliest time that a presidential candidate has had a faith engagement director was when he hired me as early as he did. And he did it because I think his generation, my generation, is really seeing the end of the culture wars. Like, it doesn't have to be separate to be somebody who believes in queer rights, who believes in feminism, and to be a religious person. Those two issues that have galvanized the religious right are really coming to an end. And I think that Pete saw that and he was able to speak to it. So it was just incredibly an honor to be selected for this because I think of who I am as a feminist, as a queer person, and as a minister to come and serve on a campaign where an openly gay man who's also very dedicated Episcopalian was running for president. So, and I think that I hope it's a turning point in politics, both for people of faith to realize that there is a good way to engage in politics. I feel like one of the other dichotomies was like, you're either the religious right or you believe in the separation of church and state. And that's all that exists politically. But really, this created a power vacuum for one people to advocate their specific theocracy. And I think the answer is not, well, we're just going to advocate for separation of church and state, although I think that's important to do. I think we should also add, listen, we also have spiritual values that promote, that say same-sex marriage is beautiful and good. We have religious values that are for women's rights. We have religious values that really want us to combat racism. Like, these are also coming from spiritual points of view that need to be in the public square, that our theological commitments have political ramifications, and we need to be talking about those, not because we want people to share the same theological commitments as us, but because we know it is for the benefit of people whether they share those same beliefs as us or not. So I think it was just really great to help push that message out to communities of faith and help them realize, and to the people who are spiritual but not religious. You know, a lot of people don't realize how the spiritual but not religious as a movement is because of the political aspect, not because of the religious aspect, but because of how politics and religion got together to consolidate for the religious right. And so they just turned it all off. But I don't think the answer then to these people is to be like, well, we're completely apolitical. We don't believe in any politics, so you can come here, which is not true. Everything you do is political, just like I think everything you do is spiritual, right? So I think the answer is really saying, well, here is what we believe, and this is how it informs our politics. And you can belong to one congregation that has different political implications than another congregation, especially even inside of Unitarian Universalism. That is totally true and possible. And so I just feel like the big message that went out to the spiritual but not religious is that there's a home for you out there. Yeah. Religion has moved on from these cultural war issues. It's not a place that is going to invalidate who you are or be full of hate. That there's just a lot of different places. And so I was really grateful to be out there to be able to bring that message to people that there's a home for you.
And I really appreciated when you were appointed to this position. You know, I knew that our message, which is, I think, often not heard, and not just a UU message, but just kind of the progressive values, religious values that a lot of mainline denominations and so on espouse too, but don't get out there because we've got this really like polarized sense of what it means to be religious. And when we think about the intersection of religion and politics, you know, we generally think of all this kind of awful stuff that goes on. But the reality is there are people who are voting through the values that they hold that are supported by their faith community. And a lot of those values are progressive and uplifting and embracing of inclusivity and all different kinds of people. So I really appreciate that maybe, you know, crossing my fingers, and it sounds like you're affirming this, that the conversation is shifting a little bit, you know, that it's no longer just so polarized and so, you know. So, but what have you learned along the way about whether it's faith communities or people of faith or just doing this kind of work, good and bad? I mean, what have been the revelations that have come?
I think the thing that was the most interesting to me was how each beliefs, you know, religion, communities of faith approach politics. And basically, there's just communities that have one reason or another are way more organized politically. And then there's communities that are not very well organized. Politically. And there's a lot of different factors to that, you know, the history of the United States and the vulnerabilities that different faith communities have had coming under prosecution. And I feel like, you know, Unitarian Universalism was heavily politically organized, but has kind of not been as organized politically as we used to be. Like, how many presidents were Unitarians back in the day, right? And I really hope that we can get back to it, because I think that religious communities that are politically organized are able to protect their people, to be honest, at the end of the day. And the ones that don't can't. I mean, and so it's just, there's just this very physical thing about being a community of faith and being able to help your people or not. I think one of the best examples of this is like with the immigration. Of how a lot of different communities of faith have come together to be able to advocate for immigrants and to stop the separations at the border and to stop the deportations and the death that is happening. And that has a lot of cross-religious purposes, because some people are, you know, are being targeted because of their faith for immigration. And so to see so many different people of faith really come out and the ones that are more politically organized are more effective in helping immigrants to be able to protect their lives and their livelihoods, whether they share that same belief system as them or not. They're there, you know, closing down detention centers, or they're there helping them cross the border or filing their paperwork. And I just think that so being politically organized and having the maturity to understand that your belief system has political ramifications is the most important thing, I think, across communities of faith that really needs to be like one of the most important things. And that was a key learning for me is just seeing how many communities of faith really accepted that or were just in denial of that.
I think sometimes we get we get scared when we think about faith communities and politics, and we immediately jump to, you know, obviously we don't support a particular candidate and we don't support a particular party. I mean, those are things we don't do as faith communities. But the fact is that the values that we have to be lived out in the world, and what we do with them becomes political, right? I mean, all the things you're talking about there, the way that we protect people, the way that we care for people who are in danger, the way that we advocate for people, all of those things have political ramifications. So I think to be in denial of that is means that we're just kind of trying to live in a bubble and escape.
We're privileged, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. And we can't do that. I mean, the truth is there are Sunday mornings where I would love to come and to a worship service and, you know, just pretend like nothing's happening out in the world and just sit there in a bubble and so on. And we may do that for a few minutes, but the reality is that we need to keep coming back to our engagement with the world. That is, that's what we're called to
do. I think it was, you know, Whitehead who talked about, you know, your theological reasoning, like being in the plane and thinking about these things, but at some point, you know, the plane's got to land.
Yeah.
Right? And well, I think that is the task of spiritual communities. Like, definitely you need respite. Definitely we need to comfort each other. Definitely we need a place to go where we don't talk about politics. I am looking forward to that place myself for the next few months, right? Definitely you need that, but you don't need it for your own self gratification.
Right.
You have a purpose.
Yeah.
You need to get to the place that you need to be of service to others,
right,
to really help and make the world better. Otherwise, yeah, you're just, you know, I think that Unitarian Universalism especially has a higher calling than self-gratification.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we do need to nourish. We need to nourish our spiritual selves and nurture ourselves and care for ourselves. But, you know, one of the main reasons we do that is so that we are able to go out in the world and do this important.
And not everybody's going to be able to get involved in politics. I definitely understand that. Like, if you're dealing with a cancer diagnosis, if you have lost your job, you know, but the churches and communities of faith are supposed to be there for you as well. I just think that I think both, you know, where people are at and why they're in community should be really understanding of each other, whether they do or don't get involved in politics, right? The people who aren't political, for whatever reason, should be very proud of the people who are political, and the people who are political should really protect the institution to support the people who aren't for whatever reason, right? There should just be a mutual understanding between the two that being part of a religious community means so many different things to so many different people, and it's okay. And we shouldn't, you know, like try to fight for one side or the other or have like a zero sum mentality that we spend so much on our social justice programs and we're not spending enough on our pastoral care program or something like that. We should just really think about the ability to build each other up. But definitely, I feel like that the social justice side gets, because it's the one that's like more forward facing. It's the ministry in public square. It's when I was a parish minister and we were doing sanctuary, you know, people were not talking about all the times that I had been there for people as they processed the death of their loved ones or helping people with that cancer diagnosis. That's not what gets in the papers. It was the person that we were trying to keep here in the United States in the face of an unjust immigration system. So you can feel like, but does that mean that the minister really cares for me? Does that mean that this community cares for me and what I'm struggling with because I'm not a political person? And I don't think that's what it is. I think that, you know, the politics and the faith really come together because there are things that we fight for politically that do affect you and our part. I don't know. I just feel like it's all part of a process.
You know, this is why faith communities are important, right? Because we all bring our talents, our skills, our abilities, whatever we have into that place. And then we're able to be stronger together. And that might mean that there's a few people that do very political things and a lot of people who don't, but we're all part of it.
And I think the thing that you can do that really destroys community is avoiding it. Is avoiding the topic, is not talking about. I think that is like the worst adage of, you know, keeping polite company, never discuss faith and politics, right? And I think that really has put people aside so that we don't know how to talk about the really very difficult issues together. And religious communities, people of faith, should be incubators to have the very, very difficult discussions that politics brings up, that religion brings up, especially in a pluralistic religion like Unitarian Universalism. We have got to be able to discuss our deeply held differences difference. As much as we talk about the things that bring us together, we need to talk about, like, no, I am fundamentally different from you in this way. I have had a completely different experience than you in this way, but we still come worship together. And I think that is where the power of our community is. It is not in avoiding politics. And it's not in saying, well, this person's a Republican, so they can never come to our congregation again. It is that we really have to be able to have those dialogues and still set the boundaries about what is and isn't acceptable about the things that we'll fight at court together as a communal unit. And that is really hard. It is hard work, but I think that is the work. And to be able to discuss those things
within our own communities, you know, if we can't model that there, then how can we possibly, you know, help to heal some of the division we see in our country today? So we have to start.
And I think when you start talking about it, you build up your resilience, you build up your compassion and empathy, and you just find out that people who are totally different than you. I mean, that's one of the key things that I learned talking to evangelicals and to people who supported Trump the last time around. You know, I still reached out, talked to them, and made the case for Pete and ending these religious culture wars. And I, you know, I love these people. And they're so different from me. And I still want to fight for, you know, racial justice. And I still want to fight for against everything Trump stands for. And I think there's a big difference between connecting with people on a one-on-one level with good boundaries around it and everything, and then but systemically saying, you know, the system is racist, and what Trump is doing is dog whistle racism and demagoguery to consolidate his power, and that is wrong. So I feel like there's a good tension between individualism and being able to connect with people on one-on-one to build up your local community. But then when it comes to federal policies, when it comes to your state and city policies that systemically affect it, you know, coming down on the right side of justice to make sure that racism ends, that sexism ends, and really following the communities of color and Black people who are leading the way and showing the nation the way that we have to come out of this, and supporting their leadership. So I think there's like a tension in all of it about what do you do systemically, and how do you hold people responsible individually for their prejudiced and racist beliefs. But you can't really build that bridge. I feel like as a white person, I have to have these discussions with other white people and really move them along. And I'm not going to be able to do it if I can't figure out how to have difficult discussions with people I love in my congregation in the first place.
And it is challenging. And I certainly admit, and I've admitted publicly, that it's been hard, even, you know, with family members and loved ones, to kind of think about how do I approach this relationship with an open heart and all the values that I proclaim that I have as a Unitarian Universalist, and, you know, and yet at the same time be true to the integrity of where I believe, you know, there are lines that we just don't cross, and there are things we have to stand up against. So, yeah, it's challenging. And I'm just curious if you would be so kind as to share with us maybe a lived experience or two you've had in the last few months that you hold on to as kind of a beacon of hope.
My job mainly was to talk to ministers all day. Like I've talked to thousands of ministers and rabbis and imams and spiritual leaders. And the burden is really heavy on us to keep on providing hope in these times. Like we put on, I feel like, a good face for our communities, and then we go home and read the news and we're like, how am I supposed to face my people the next day? And so we have to you know, really go deep in our own spiritual practices and really help people connect with theirs to be able to survive these times, and not only survive, but to counteract all of the systemic evil that's going on, right? And that was my favorite part of my job. But I have come to the conclusion that, you know, hope is an expectation that things will get better. And I wonder about that. And so I have decided that rather than hold on to an expectation that things will get better, I instead choose to love the world, which is that I'm going to show up and be there for people no matter what. No matter how difficult it is, no matter how people tell me they think it's worthless, that it doesn't matter, I have just found over and over it matters when I show up, when I offer my words, however inarticulate, when I call people, even when they think it's the end. And I think that really is about love and loving the world as it is, meeting it where it's at, and continuing to draw people together towards a grander vision of where we should all be. And so that's what I have decided to do with my experience here, even though my candidate lost. Even though there's just all these terrible things going on, I have chosen to love the world anyway, because that is what I can do. And I don't ever have an expectation that it will get better anymore. I know that's not a very hopeful message, but I just really think that having a spiritual practice of loving the world despite it all, and finding the good in it and really connecting with people, it's so much more satisfying than hoping for things.
But I appreciate that, you know, rather than spending our time hoping for things, we're in the process of loving, we create space, hopefully, for those good things to emerge, but we have no expectation that for sure it's going to happen.
Yeah, I feel like loving is so much more action-oriented. I've got to do things in order to demonstrate love, whereas hope, I can sit at home and be like, well, you know, I hope it turns out to be a little bit better. And I often think about, the quote from Martin Luther King Jr. about how love without power is anemic, and politics is all about power. So really, the way I still feel that this is ministry and still is a spiritual practice is how to have the love and the power come together in a way that is good for everyone. And that's what I will try to keep on doing with my love.
Were there any specific instances where you saw that love and power emerging, or the possibility of it, or whatever, and it just felt very affirming?
I mean, right now I just can't believe how Pete dropped out to endorse Biden. You know, I know this is silly and it seems really political, but he really felt like that thing about country over party and party over people, that even though they had been enemies, he dropped out to endorse somebody because that's what he believed in. You know, I don't agree with it, but I really respect it. And the care they showed for each other in that moment. It's just crazy how many political things still require a huge emotional component to be able to do. So I'm still thinking about that. When you're on the campaign trail, you know, I certainly talk to ministers about their deepest and darkest, difficult things that were going on in the country, but Pete definitely heard from everybody about everything, and being able to make it, and what was wrong with this country and what wasn't going well, over and over and over and over again. Every candidate does. And you really have to really think that you care about this nation to be able to serve them well. And I really hope that's what every politician at the end of the day does. And I think being on the outside of the political campaign, it sounds crazy, you know, because I've been an activist for so long, to think that politicians maybe at the end of the day really do love their people. But then being on the inside of the campaign and meeting lots and lots and lots of politicians and political people and bureaucrats, you know, I would say the majority of them really do want to serve and love their people and are doing the best they can. And that has been a huge surprise for me.
Having somebody who can say, I've been there, I've met these folks, and, you know, there's a lot of people with a lot of good intentions trying to do good work. And that's, I think, a really, well, that's a good message for all of us to know. And I'm so pleased that you're with us today. This has been a really illuminating conversation for me. I'm going to go forward and love the world. You've inspired me. And because I do struggle sometimes with that. I really do, you know, and I know that's part of our calling as Unitarian Universalists, to love each other and love the world and everything that means, and all the work that also comes with that process of actually actively loving the world. But it can be challenging sometimes. So appreciate your message today. And thank you so much for being with us.
Yeah.
And time very well spent.
For inviting.
Thank you so much.
We're very grateful for Reverend Shauna for spending some time with us to do that interview this week.